The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
2021's been a heck of a year so far. What's going on, everyone? Welcome into First Take. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. Michael Collins, good to have you with us. We'll get to you in just a moment. Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith, I'm Molly Karam Rose, and you know where we're going to begin with the latest on Tiger Woods. So let's start there now. He's recovering from a lengthy surgery to repair what a doctor said Tuesday night were significant orthopedic injuries to his right lower extremity sustained in a single car rollover crash hours earlier on a steep roadway in a Los Angeles suburb. Now, as a part of a statement on Woods' official Twitter account, his doctor at Harbor UCLA Medical Center said in part that Woods had multiple open fractures to his lower right leg, had a rod placed in his tibia, and screws and pins inserted in his ankle during an emergency surgery. The statement said Woods is currently awake, responsive, and recovering in his hospital room. Thank God. Stephen A., I'll start with you. What was your reaction initially when you heard about Tiger's accident?
Well, initially, I was scared to death. Considering what transpired last January 26th with Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gianna, and seven others in that fatal helicopter crash. Along with so many, stories involving death in the year 2020 coming into 2021. When you saw the accident, when you saw the truck and the details were not available to us at that particular moment in time, I feared the worst. I was scared to death that Tiger Woods was in a car accident and that ultimately it would prove to be fatal. As the hours went by, and I was summoned to Sports Center yesterday. We got news that came in first from his representatives talking about it was he had incurred leg injuries and he was being operated on. Once you heard that it was about his legs and what have you, the next emotional reaction I had was just relief. The fact that, you know, I know there was people out there contemplating writing his epitaph and eulogizing him to some degree. The fact that we didn't have to go that route, I was incredibly relieved, and I didn't really care too much about his career and whether or not it would be resumed. He is 45 years of age. His best days appear to be behind him. He had accomplished a great many things in the sport of golf, a 15-time a majors champion, 82 PGA Tour wins, recognized universally as arguably the greatest who's ever lived, even though he never caught Jack Nicklaus. The bottom line is that as a golfer, he solidified himself a long time ago as one of, if not the greatest ever. This was about the man, the human being, the father, and just hoping beyond hope that, you know, he ended up okay. And so now that we're hearing about, you know, his leg injury and what have you, the fact that we expect to see him again alive and well and spending time with his family, the emotion that comes to my mind is relief. But initially, to answer your question directly, I was scared to death. I thought that we were going to hear news that he had passed away, and that's what I'm relieved that that's not the case.
I was on the air live doing my radio show when this news broke, and you don't want to speculate, so all I could really do is repeat the information at the time that was available at the time. And Stephen A., I felt exactly as you did. My mind immediately, I think as most of us did, went to Kobe Bryant, and I thought, oh, no, come on. And especially when you see the pictures of the car, and the early reporting was that they had to extricate him from the vehicle with the jaws of life. Paramedics and firefighters bringing him to a hospital and a single car accident, you think, please be alive. That's the first thing. Survive this. And then when his agent posted that the statement that he was having surgery on multiple leg injuries, I also started talking about at that moment on air the fact that, look, you don't know anything yet other than it's leg injuries. But what that does tell you is you feel better than if you hear head injuries or some major organs. And so you at that point, you started feeling like, okay, we're out of the woods in terms of the mortal peril to Tiger Woods. And at that point, your mind starts going to new places. You think, is he going to be okay in his career? You don't allow yourself to go there immediately because you're worried about his life. What's this going to mean going forward? And then, of course, what happened? Tiger Woods in 2009 was in a car crash. In 2017, was asleep at the wheel. He was taking medication. He didn't understand the side effects. And so you think, how did it happen? What's the investigation going to show? But the first thing was, is he okay? Is he going to live? Then what does this mean going forward? And then, okay, what comes of this? Why did this happen? The big takeaway, so to speak, is you're not promised tomorrow. I mean, we're constantly reminded of this. And when I think of Tiger Woods, guys, in my lifetime, he is one of only, I'd say, three athletes who stood out, who captured the public's imagination in the way he did. There was Michael Jordan in my lifetime, at least not as a five-year-old or something. There was Mike Tyson and there was Tiger Woods. He was one of those guys that loomed so much larger than the game he played in the public's imagination. And right now, I think the main thing is we all breathe a sigh of relief that this was not a fatal crash, that Tiger Woods is alive.
Yeah, Max, just like you, I was on the air doing my radio show and had just gotten into the first segment. And I looked down as my phone started buzzing even before I was going through Twitter and saw that one of our colleagues, Adam Schefter, was calling me. And I couldn't understand quite why he would be calling me. Even though we're friends and talk golf stuff all the time, because, you know, in that first segment of radio, we were talking about Tiger and his interview with Jim Nance and what we thought that was going to mean going forward. And then as the report came across Twitter and the picture of the SUV came across, my initial thought was just like both you and Stephen A. Smith. And that is, it's a gut punch. When you see the picture of that SUV and read that report, of a single car crash and him being the only occupant in the vehicle, and the initial report of what they had to use, what they said at the time they had to use to get him out, which proved later to not be true. But when you hear that the first time, that sinking feeling hits your stomach and your initial thought is, oh no, please not this, not now. And that, which was the same feeling that we had when we learned about Kobe, and that was the biggest fear. And then as the day went on and as the reports came in, you go from life-threatening injuries to limb-threatening injuries. And I started texting back and forth with a friend of mine who was a trauma surgeon in the armed forces, and so was asking, hey, what should I be looking for? What should we be expecting? And then seeing some of, you know, Justin Thomas having to do his presser while this news was coming out, and you could see how emotional he was. And listen, when it comes down to it, there are times when things happen that a person's occupation doesn't matter, and that the only thing that matters is life and family. And initially, when we saw that car and those reports initially came out, that's all that mattered. The only thing that mattered was Tiger Woods' life and his family. And now, thank goodness, we can look back and take a little bit of a breath and go, okay, as of now, life is not in jeopardy. And so it's nice to be able to take that breath and move on from there, because for that initial moment, we didn't have that luxury.
You know, somebody texted me yesterday, and they said to me they wanted to make it very, very clear that they know Tiger well, and they were talking about how he was on his way to work to shoot a series for Discovery Golf when the crash took place. And they emphasized that, you know, they felt it was important that he was working and wanted to be early, that he was quite responsible and professional, and they felt like that message wasn't coming across. I didn't quite understand why they felt the need to emphasize that to me. But I guess what I'm asking you is I'm interested in knowing, when we talk about the golf world, because I know you've spoken to several people in the golf world, obviously over the last 24 hours or so. I'm interested in knowing, you know, just the outpouring of emotion, how it speaks to the change, whatever change that has taken place with Tiger Woods. Can you crystallize for the audience out there, you know, what Tiger Woods was compared to what he is now as a person, because it seems like it's one thing for the obvious to be put forth. You're happy he's alive and things of that nature. But it's another thing entirely where you see the emotions pouring for him in ways that you never anticipated it would pour out for Tiger Woods at least once upon a time. Things have changed drastically for him. Can you crystallize that for our audience?
Absolutely, Stephen A. And it goes back to the Tiger Woods that was and the Tiger Woods that is. And he has changed as a person. During our radio show, I was on and we had Paul Azinger on, and he was talking about the Tiger Woods that he used to compete against and why the young guys now are so emotional. And he said something that really struck me and hit home because of how true it is. And he said when he was playing against Tiger Woods, Tiger was uncomfortable if you were comfortable with him. The kids now, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Tiger now is uncomfortable if you're not comfortable with him. And I think that speaks a lot to who Tiger Woods is today compared to who he was before, which is why with all the young golfers that are on the PGA Tour now, why you see the outpouring from athletes, not even in golf, but in all sports, the outpouring of emotion and prayers, hoping for the best for Tiger Woods. Because the Tiger Woods in 2000 is not the Tiger Woods of today. And I don't mean the golfer, I mean the person. And so the person that everyone loves today is a different person because he's a father, because of everything that he's gone through in his life. It is very difficult, even for the most stringent Tiger haters that are out there, not to root for this guy because of the comebacks that we've seen and everything that he's gone through. As you see now, that hug with him and Charlie when he won the 2019 Masters and there with his mom, that kind of emotion, knowing everything he had gone through and then looking back and remembering the hug that he shared with his dad on that green. That's the guy we now know. That's the guy that we all now appreciate because of the growth of a human being that is Tiger Woods.
By the way, I should mention that stretch of road where he crashed, apparently, the reporting is that's known locally as a dangerous spot where there are accidents. I just wanted to mention that because I hadn't mentioned it when I said, what will the investigation show? Piggybacking off of that question, Michael, in like movie making, in a script, ideally the emotional arc of the character matches the action, right? The arc of the action. And in Tiger Woods' case, as you're describing his emotional journey and where he wound up, he won his first major in forever. What was it, 11 years? At the Masters, right? So he'd finally, in that emotional journey, it matched the action of the story. And if he never golfs again, it feels like the 2019 Masters is the perfect ending. Is that something that is being discussed in, have you considered that? Is that being discussed in golf circles? Like, wow,
no.
He got there,
no.
He won the Masters.
No, because it's Tiger Woods. And you have to remember, he won after that as well. He tied Sam Snead's record later. And so that's the one thing about golf. When you look at golf, there is no walk away like John Elway. Like you win the Super Bowl and say, that's it. Hey, hats off, I'm out, and do the mic drop. That's very rarely, if ever, in golf does that happen, because guys can keep playing. And remember, there's PGA Tour champions that is after, 50 that you could go play on. And I know Tiger, wanted to try and compete in the U.S. Senior Open. And if he won that tournament, then he would be the only player to have all USGA trophies in his house in history, which, Tiger loves stuff like that. So as movie-esque as it would have been for him to win that Masters and then just walk away into the sunset, maybe only playing in events with Charlie like we saw him do with the father-son last year, that's not quite how golf works. And so that's also why now you hear golfers talk about if there's one guy who would be able to come back from any injury out there, it's Tiger Woods, because what we've seen him go through before, how he won the U.S. Open in 2008 on a broken leg, how he came back through those back surgeries and you know, won the Masters. This is Tiger Woods we're talking about, so you never doubt him.
Yeah. Michael, thank you so much for being with us. Always a pleasure. And the three words that stand out to me, awake, responsive, and recovering. And when you see those images of him with his son and his daughter, just so grateful that he's still here today. And we know it'll be a long road of recovery. But we'll have much more coverage on this throughout the day, of course. And we'll have a live report from Los Angeles as well. Michael, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Be sure to join us Friday on First Take when we'll be joined by Pelican superstar Zion Williamson, who was just named to his first All-Star game. Huge congrats, Zion. We'll ask the young phenom who the best dunkers are in the league. Don't miss that. All right, gentlemen, let's get to our next debate here, which is the Steelers. So here's the deal. Early this morning, Steelers president Art Rooney II called his meeting yesterday with Ben Roethlisberger productive. He also said that Big Ben assured him that he's committed to coming back to help the Steelers win. The Steelers have said Roethlisberger will not be back on his current contract because they can't afford his, get ready for this number, guys, whopping $41.25 million salary cap hit for 2021. Stephen A., how important is it for Big Ben to return to your Steelers? In case people don't know, you are a fan of the yellow and black.
Well, it's very pivotal. Even though we look at Ben Roethlisberger and we question whether or not he can be the ingredient that leads them to a Super Bowl title, I personally believe it's the absence of a running game. They've had a bottom three running attack in the National Football League the last 3 years, which is just unthinkable for a Pittsburgh Steelers franchise that I've known and loved since I was a kid. But here's the bottom line. What other choice do you have? I think it's incredibly pivotal because as of right now, if you don't have Big Ben Roethlisberger, what you've got to defer to is Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins. Here's my response to that as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Hell no. No way in hell should that be the case. Now, listen, Big Ben Roethlisberger, I think he's prone to mistakes. I think if you get him to throw the football 50 times, he's going to make a couple of mistakes, or relatively pivotal mistakes. I recognize that. But the brother still threw for nearly 4,000 yards. He still had 33 touchdowns and just 10 interceptions. He still completed over 65% of his passes. He's been to three Super Bowls. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion. He does make plays. He does make enough big plays. And when you consider the plethora of weapons that they have available to them, whether it's James Washington, Juju Smith-Schuster, Claypool, Eric Ebron and the crew, the bottom line is you've got weapons to throw the football to, and you have somebody in Big Ben Roethlisberger who can throw them the football. He can't shrug off tacklers the way that he used to. He can't even scramble the way that he used to and extend plays to the degree that he used to. But he can still do it if you gave him a running game. My biggest issue for saying that Ben Roethlisberger's return is pivotal is the fact that there can't be a leaning on Mason Rudolph. I don't want to hear that Mason Rudolph is the new quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I just don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I've seen enough of him. I don't believe in him. I believe in him as a backup.
I believe in him as an emergency dude to lean on for a few possessions or even a couple of games. But the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm going to say it again, hell no. And don't get me started with no Dwayne Haskins. I don't want to hear it. Let him show that he's professional enough to be in the league and to be responsible, Max, without getting himself in compromising situations during the Rona. During the Rona, okay? You would think you know better as a quarterback to not expose yourself to the Rona, okay? But this dude was sitting up there being irresponsible. I don't know the details. I ain't going to get into the details, all right? This is a PC, it's a PG program. But damn it, he shouldn't have been in those situations, okay? So I'm not trusting him, and I certainly don't trust Mason Rudolph on a football field. And that is what elevates the level of urgency when it comes to Big Ben Roethlisberger returning as the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I don't know if they have the assets, Max, to pull off a trade and get the get a guy a quarterback, and I certainly don't believe they could do it through the draft. That's where I am with Big Ben.
Well, Stephen A., you're being very emotional. May I say, you're being quite
Absolutely.
Emotional. And you are a fan of the team.
Yes.
Allow me, even though everyone in our generation had a rooting interest, either Cowboys or Steelers, right? So I'm with you on the Steelers. But let me, as not a hardcore Steelers fan, give you an objective take here.
Feel free.
It would be real cool if Roethlisberger ended his career with the Steelers eventually, the only team he ever played for.
Yeah.
One of the greatest franchises ever. As a great quarterback, all that. The way Eli did for the Giants, same draft class, right? When you've won Super Bowls with a franchise and been to a bunch of them, and it's cool if you can do that. It ain't necessary. Joe Montana was the GOAT before Tom Brady was. Joe Montana didn't end his career in San Francisco. Tom Brady replaced Joe Montana as the GOAT. Tom Brady didn't end his career in New England. And even other guys who were just associated with franchises and didn't win Super Bowls but were excellent for a bunch of years, like Philip Rivers in San Diego and later Los Angeles, or Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia. They didn't end their careers with the teams they started with. That's the NFL. So from that point of view, it'd be cool. It ain't necessary. That's one. Two, from the Steelers' point of view, Roethlisberger is a competent quarterback still, and he's clearly the best option that they presently have, at least that we're aware of. But we still, like, he ain't going to win them the Super Bowl. I don't know if you can win a Super Bowl right now with Roethlisberger unless you are, like, the most loaded team in the league, given his age, the injuries, and the change in his game. Especially with the offensive line the Steelers have. That's why they don't run, because they don't run block. They don't pass protect. That, and then he lost his dude on the line who retired. Okay, so I don't think Roethlisberger makes the difference. But you say, yeah, but at least he's competent. The Steelers won't be like a laughingstock without him. But here's the thing you might be forgetting, Stephen A. They got Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin's never been under 500 in his career as a head coach, even without Roethlisberger, as little as, what, 13, 14 months ago? 15 months ago? Like, Belichick has been under 500 now. Not Tomlin. So what you know about the Steelers with Mike Tomlin as coach, they will field a competitive team. Does Roethlisberger make a difference? Yeah, but it's marginal in the sense that he ain't going to win the Super Bowl or make a deep playoff run, I don't believe, at this point. So from the Steelers' point of view, it'd be cool to have Roethlisberger. It's not the end of the world if you don't. And from Roethlisberger's point of view and the rest of ours, same sort of thing. Yeah, it'd be nice. It ain't that important, Stephen A.
Well, you can say that. I disagree with you, again, because of Mason Rudolph and Dwayne Haskins. And even though I love me some Mike Tomlin, all right, you know how I feel about Mike Tomlin, my brother, big-time coach, and he deserves a lot of credit. This is the one point where you can, you know, I pinpoint things because I'm a Steelers fan. Year for years, I had issues with the secondary. All these short dudes he puts in the secondary. But they're athletic and they can play. And now that you've got Minkah Fitzpatrick back there with my boy Joe Hayden and the crew, I mean, I'm good with it. I would love a pass rush. I wish J.J. Watt would go to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Join the brothers. Join the brothers. Derek and T.J. Join the brothers and show up in Pittsburgh, J.J.
Shame
That's the
you.
Way to go. That's the way to go. But here's the deal, Max. I can't let Mike Tomlin or Kevin Colbert off the hook when the last 3 years your running game has been 29th or worse. This past season it was dead last at 32. That's unacceptable. These are Pittsburgh Steelers we're talking about here. You got to be able to run the football, okay? And yeah, you got to do some run blocking. And I think James Conner can play. He's not a scrub. I just don't view him as a game changer. He's a methodical workhorse and what have you. And you know, obviously, he ain't the most durable dude in the world either, even though his story is great and he's overcome an awful lot in his life. And he's somebody that I root for constantly. At the end of the day, they got to buffer that running game, man. They got to buffer the running game. And if you do that, I think that Big Ben Roethlisberger can do a lot for you because you're not asking as much from him. The man has thrown for over 60,000 yards. He's attempted over 77,000 passes in his career. He's got 396 touchdowns on his resume. He has 201 interceptions, so I'm concerned about that. Not even a 2-to-1 ratio in terms of touchdown to turnovers. But in the end, if Big Ben Roethlisberger, if you can get him a running game, and that defense is still that defense, yes, Max, they'd have a shot to win it all. They would.
Yeah, but you know what? Pouncey retired. And especially in the modern NFL, the center to the quarterback. Forget about the relationship off the field or anything like that. That's so important. If anything, the offensive line, I know you're like, well, he's old. You can get a younger guy. It's likely to get worse at first. And then, Stephen A., the fact of the matter is, Roethlisberger is great. He's going to the Hall of Fame. The fact is, Terry Bradshaw, because of the 4 Super Bowl rings, it's not like Roethlisberger is going to replace him as the greatest Steelers quarterback in the eyes of the fans.
My
point is, there's nothing that says absolutely Roethlisberger must stay a Steeler. He's aiming for this, or without him, they'll be terrible. Or with him, they'll win a Super Bowl.
That's all they got. And remember, when you bring up my Steelers and you bring up Terry Bradshaw, we loved Lynn Swann. We love John Stallworth. But you know what? Franco Harris and Rocky Bly in that backfield didn't hurt. Okay, it did hurt. Woo. You need somebody to run the damn football.
Didn't hurt either.
You need somebody to run the damn football. That's all I'm saying. Run the football.
Facts.
What a defense.
Steelers finished the season at 12-4. I just want to mention this quickly, guys. Again, Big Ben, the $41 million, that would be the largest cap hit over a single season. That really
not
is
not going to happen. He's going to take a pay cut, Molly. He's going to take a pay cut.
No, of course. But I'm just saying, imagine he was about to make $41 million this season. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Meanwhile, Dak Prescott can be franchise tagged for the second year in a row from now up until March 9th. Dak still has no deal from Dallas long-term security or the tag. Here's our Ed Werder with his thoughts on the Cowboys situation.
Even if they franchise tag him, I think they have to consider drafting a quarterback with the 10th overall pick. That's the highest pick they've had since 2016. With quarterbacks available in this draft and continuing uncertainty about Dak Prescott's long-term commitment, I think they would have to consider drafting a quarterback, even though that's not the way Jerry Jones has operated.
The last time Dallas took a quarterback in the first round, that would be Troy Aikman back in 1989. Look who's here. It's about time I see my friend with some good energy. We're ready for our prom picture and our choral in just a bit. Swaggoo, we'll get to you in a second.
I mean,
obviously, this is your squad.
It is beautiful. It is beautiful today. The fact that we matched it up and the other two guys look like they going to work on Wall Street. I'm just glad we added some juice to this show today. Fashion sense.
A little flavor. A little something, something.
Anytime
we need
I
spring.
Show up, there's juice, brother. Anytime I show up, there's juice.
Okay.
It's all right, though. I feel you.
I fit.
The juice is loose. Okay, let's go.
Mark Stephen is dressing a, like, should dressing Dallas like Crockett draft? Or Tubbs from Miami Vice. It's 2021, brother. What are you doing?
Clean. Clean. I'm living the clean life,
Max. We all
Max.
Need a little
That's
color
all.
Sometimes. That's right. So fresh and so clean. Stephen A., should Dallas draft a quarterback with that 10th pick? What do you think they should do?
Hell no. And no quarterback should want to go there. All you got to do is see how they're treating Dak Prescott and shouldn't even want to be there. That's number one. Number two, is Trevor Lawrence going to last to number 10? No. Justin Fields going to last until number 10? Likelihood, no. Is Zach Wilson going to last until number 10? Likelihood, no. And there's no other quarterback than anybody felt was worth mentioning at the number 10 spot anyway. I like this kid, Mac Jones, out of Alabama, but I don't expect, I think that he's considered a late first rounder, and I don't think anybody would take the chance of taking him that early, that high in the draft. Having said all of that, again, if those top two quarterbacks are not taken, if they're gone before, unless they fall at number 10, I don't think that you do that. My attitude is, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you know what? How about Patrick Surtain out of Alabama? I mean, he's the leading cornerback in the national, coming into the draft out of Alabama. And what this brother can do, potentially as a shutdown corner, I think can make Dallas's defense very, very elite. We know they need help on the defensive side of the ball. They've got several holes to fill in that regard. But having a shutdown corner to shut off one side of the field can definitely go a long way. I think that's the manner in which you go. You go about the business of prioritizing signing Dak Prescott, coming to your damn senses and doing what's right, and you call it a day. I don't think you should be thinking about bringing another quarterback into the equation, because that's just making more trouble for next season. First of all, Dak Prescott in all likelihood would be there because you'd franchise him. Secondly, Andy Dalton is no scrub. He's a backup that's capable of giving you a starting minutes, at least for a couple of games or a few games or so. I think that is the route that you go. You do not draft a quarterback. You draft somebody on the defensive side of the ball, and primarily in this particular case, considering how big time Patrick Surtain is out of Alabama, I think you go that route.
I think first, Ed Werder has had a very good, he's like been all over this situation with good ways to think about it. For example, I quoted the other day, I actually think it was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin in the morning, Stephen A., on the radio. I think Ed was like, look, you wanted that fifth year of control so bad that you wouldn't take four, instead you took one. It doesn't make sense. So I like the way he's thinking about this, but I disagree with this. I'm with you here, Stephen A., unfortunately. You don't draft a quarterback 10 unless you love the guy. Like, if Justin Fields falls to 10, yes, because he's considered, he has some of the same qualities Dak does, but maybe we don't know about the leadership and the professionalism because he hasn't been there yet. But physically, he seems like a souped-up version, maybe. So I get it. I get that. And then it restarts the rookie contract and all that. But if he's not there, why spend the 10th pick on it? Let's not forget, they got Dak in the fourth round. They might love a guy later in the draft. You don't have to use the 10th overall pick. And I'll tell you something else. Dallas has a lot of holes to fill right now. You mentioned a defensive back. Yes, Stephen A. A corner, they really need it. That's probably top. But I'll give you another idea here. The offensive line. The reason Dallas's offense got so great, not just Dak, because before that it was Romo. It was the offensive line. They invested in that offensive line. It was like one year after another. First round pick, first round pick, first round pick. I want to say 4 out of 5 years. That's why they had the best O-line in the business. It ain't the best anymore. You've had injury. You've had retirement. You've had a whole bunch of stuff. And guys just continue to miss time because of injury. The O-line's not the same anymore. That offense won't be the same. So I would say, you're probably right. Corner first. I would look at the O-line if I wasn't looking at the corner. By the way, linebacker.
Oh, my God.
They have this tandem at linebacker that looks super, super, like, athletic and talented, but they underproduce. They have so many problems that they need to address high up in the draft. Quarterback isn't one of them, especially since they're giving Dak a contract. Let's not get crazy.
Well, listen, first of all, we're talking about this situation with a caveat. Obviously, we're talking about should the Cowboys draft a quarterback if one of the guys we've been talking about in this draft falls to number 10, or they can make a move up to get him. Yes, it's smart. because you don't want to be in Stephen A's team situation down the line. What Pittsburgh is in right now, don't have a damn quarterback, bad numbers on the book for their starting quarterback. You don't know if Dak is going to want to come back to Dallas. You don't know if this contract is going to get done. Max, I done heard everybody say what you just said. It's going to get done. They're going to sign. How? What evidence do you have to prove that a contract is going to get done? Because all the evidence leads me to believe that we'll be here again watching Dak Prescott play on the franchise tag. And then guess what after that franchise tag? Either you're telling me that Andy Dalton is the future and you're going to use him as a bridge quarterback until you can identify one, or you draft one of these young guys, you figure out a way to get them, you don't have to pay them a lot of money, and just in case Dak Prescott, who, by the way, has all the leverage, decides I'm going to depart from Dallas and go play somewhere else. You know what you got? A succession plan. You know who else was killed for that? That doesn't look so bad now? The Green Bay Packers. They got Jordan Love. Everybody lost their mind, went crazy.
Oh, please.
The bottom line is they have potentially a succession plan. Please, your yes. team just signed Dwayne Haskins and Mason Rudolph is the backups. That's why Pittsburgh is in the situation they're in right now. I definitely don't like that.
But in the same breath, don't talk to me about Jordan Love. You haven't seen him yet. Don't get me started on Matt LaFleur and what's going on in Green Bay. That's number one. Number two.
They drafted him as a succession plan.
I understand. I understand. We'll see Jordan whether Love. Or not there is a succession plan. We'll find out. We'll see. Secondly, and more importantly, here's the deal. Why are you talking about Big Ben Roethlisberger like that? I mean, 33 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, throw for 3,800 yards at 15 games. You talking like he a scrub or something like that. They don't have no offensive line. Don't have any running game. All right, you put it all on him. I'm not saying that he's that dude anymore, but it ain't like the brother's a scrub. It ain't like he can't come in there next year and still do some things. You ain't got to be so disrespectful like that.
What?
You heard what I said?
Number one, my argument had nothing to do with Ben Roethlisberger's ability. We know he's lost some ability, but we also know that if you insulate him with good people around him, he still can sufficiently carry a franchise in a way.
Okay.
But what you gonna do after he leaves, Stephen A?
Well, I understand that.
Do you know Pittsburgh is going to have a quarterback next year?
I do not know that, but I do know what they do have. Wait a minute, I do know what they do have, and I do know in the case of the Dallas Cowboys. Again, you're making the assumption that people are assuming Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, or Zach Wilson. They were just saying blanketly the Dallas Cowboys need to draft a quarterback. They didn't sit up there. Of course, if one of those three are available, you got to strongly consider that if you're the Dallas Cowboys. But
yeah, here's the
guess
point.
Guess what? My priority walking in, if I'm the Cowboys, I'm not thinking they're going to fall to 10. So if those three are not there at 10, then I need to prioritize elsewhere. I don't need to just grab a quarterback just to make sure I got a security blanket for Dak Prescott when I can get a Patrick Surtain or this kid Slade out of Northwestern as an offensive tackle or somebody else. I might need to go that route instead of just grabbing a quarterback just to make sure I got somebody that can throw a football because Dak Prescott's going to be gone.
So you're not going to grab one this year just to put yourself in position to draft one next year?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question, Marcus. What did you say?
Marcus. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Max. You're going to draft a quarterback
next year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, draft him next year.
I was going to say, I hate admitting, agreeing with Stephen A. about this, Marcus, but he's absolutely right. If Justin Fields is not there at 10, if they don't love the guy that's there at 10, you know what it is just to draft a quarterback? You bring up the Steelers, right? Well, they drafted Mason Rudolph.
Max, we ain't talking about the Cowboys drafting no scrub.
We ain't talking about them drafting just any guy. You got to love the dude that you're going to draft. And they don't have to use the 10th pick. They got Dak in the 4th round. They might find a dude later on in the draft that they like as much as whoever there at 10. You bring up the Steelers as an example. That's what the Steelers did. The Steelers drafted later on, we like this guy. This guy might be the answer. He wasn't. You can't hope that the dude is going to be something and spend a draft pick on him. He has to be a guy you actually like. Obviously, Green Bay really likes Jordan Love. They really think he can be something.
Okay.
You don't do it just to do it.
Okay, well, in that case, I apologize. I was under the impression that we were focusing on this 10th pick based on the guys we've been talking about in this draft as far as quarterbacks that we think have a future. There, it's not far-fetched that the Cowboys would consider a quarterback at 10 based on what their situation is with Dak Prescott. It's also not far-fetched that they would potentially try to move up to get one of these guys. Why would that be so out of the ordinary when you got a quarterback you've been in negotiation with for 3 years that you may lose after this year? Why is that so far-fetched?
Moving up, that's a different story.
To think that they should draft a quarterback to move on in the future.
I think anything can be perceived as far-fetched when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys and intelligent decisions based on what has transpired over the last 3 years. And I'm quoting accurately because that's essentially what some dude named Marcus Spears, a.k.a. Pastor Spears, that was saying on Get Up this morning. So I'm just saying, I mean, it's not beyond the run. I mean, anytime you talk about them making sense, well, duh, they don't really usually do that.
That's why I think this would be,
you know what,
that's
Marcus?
Why I think on their behalf, this would be pretty smart.
They ain't gonna listen.
Marcus, since you and I look like Miami Vice, let's just drop them off on Wall Street, and you and I, we'll head down and go get a Mai Tai
Miami
Vice. Who
told you Marcus Spears look like Miami Vice?
He might look like one of the bouncers for Miami Vice.
I'll see you on NFL Live.
I mean, come on.